morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument this morning is Prostyakov v. Masco Corporation. Mr. Wolfmer.
Thank you. May it please the Court. Masco Corporation stands before the Court today because a AAA arbitrator created new obligations for Masco Corporation under Russian law, all contrary to an unambiguous settlement agreement. The District Court erred in confirming that award and therefore deprived Masco Corporation of the benefit of its bargain with Mr. Prostyakov.
Counsel, let me tell you up front, I don't understand the basics of the claim. The bargain was that the claim would be arbitrated. It was arbitrated, and now it's Masco who seems to me to be running away from its bargain by saying, well, we don't like the arbitration, so let's try again in court. Yeah, that's inconsistent with the whole premise of arbitration. You delegate the task to an arbitrator, and then you just have to love it or lump it. You don't get to relitigate it.
And I appreciate that, and Masco understands the limited review and what is available for this court to look at under the Federal Arbitration Act for reversal and vacation of the arbitration award. It accepts that. And we're not here to relitigate any of the facts or the conclusions, although we may disagree with some of them.
Arbitrators get to decide laws as well as facts. And, of course, under the AAA rules, they also get to rule on their own jurisdiction.
Right. The three ways which we have set forth in our brief are the ways in which we believe the arbitrator has exceeded the authority that is given to him. And this circuit, as well as the Federal Arbitration Act, allows for the appeal and the vacation when the arbitrator has, in fact, exceeded that authority. And one of the ways in which it is clear that the arbitrator has exceeded that authority is that the arbitrator had before him a clear and unequivocal provision in the agreement to apply any claim of breach of settlement agreement under Indiana law. And
I understand completely your argument that the arbitrator erred, but I don't know how many times we have said that the arbitrator making a mistake is not a ground for setting the award aside.
Yes,
because that just amounts to treating the arbitrator like a district judge, and that's not at all what you agreed to.
Right, and we agree with your statement. And if, in fact, the arbitrator had
my statement, you would have not litigated this case.
If the arbitrator had came to a conclusion under Indiana law and issued an award, we would not be raising that issue with you today.
The arbitrator said Indiana law would look to Russia under the circumstances. And I must say, I find it hard to dispute that as an original matter, since Indiana doesn't have labor books. So what would Indiana do except look to Russia?
The settlement agreement is very clear on its face that Masco had no obligations whatsoever except what's contained in the settlement agreement. The labor book is not mentioned there, and the Masco had no obligations whatsoever regarding that labor book. And as a result, Indiana law would look at the contract and say, Masco had no obligations with regard to that labor book, therefore there is no cause of action, Mr. Prostyakov.
That's an argument you could make to the arbitrator, that's for sure.
But he'd have to apply Indiana law. Here, the arbitrators deliberately said, I'm not going to apply Indiana law, I'm going to apply the law of Russia. And it's the same situation that was faced by this court in a number of cases. The BEM anthropology case and the Watts case are two of them, in which this court has specifically said that if the arbitrator has before him the law which should apply and chooses to apply different law, and the bottom line is this, if the arbitrator had not applied Russian law to the facts, to the dispute before him, this case, we would not be here today. He applied Russian law, created obligations which the party expressly agreed should not govern this dispute. The fact is, during the negotiations, Masco made it clear it did not know the law of Russia, did not trust the law of Russia, and in no circumstances wanted to apply. And that's why it's fairly unequivocal that the law of Indiana shall apply. Another point that was raised in our brief is that the AAA participated in the selection of the arbitrator, which is something that Masco had also expressly agreed not to do. That is something which it's not Masco complaining after the fact that It's not happy with the award from the very beginning and continuously. It said...
So what else did you expect to happen? Prostyakov demanded arbitration, and your client essentially refused to cooperate. What did you expect him to do except go to the AAA and say, okay, let's get this process underway because the other side is being truculent?
He has the opportunity under the Federal Arbitration Act of going to the district court and compelling arbitration. He does not have the option of going to the AAA. The contract specifically excludes
him. Your argument is there was no way you were just going to arbitrate with him. You were going to demand that he litigate, then you would arbitrate, and then you'd litigate again. I mean, you're making an argument for an award of attorney's fees to the other side. I hope you realize this.
What he's done is that he did not demand arbitration until after he initiated litigation in Russia and litigated there for several years, contrary to the agreement. And Masco was willing to arbitrate with him if he followed the proper procedures.
Masco wasn't willing to arbitrate. An arbitration demand was made, and Asco said, not on your life. It refused to participate. That's what sparked this problem. And then Masco complained when the other side went to the AAA. I mean,
because that's not what the parties agreed to do.
This just seems like vexatious refusal to abide by Masco's bargain.
No, it is not, Your Honor. The final issue that we have raised in our brief is that the labor book in itself should not even have been an issue. As I mentioned, there were no obligations with regard to the labor book. The arbitrator, by looking to Russian law, found obligations which did not exist. That's contrary to the agreement between the parties. The arbitrator does not have the authority to rewrite the agreement between the parties, which is essentially what he did. He rewrote the agreement between the parties to require Masco Corporation to do something with a labor book that had no obligations to do. And so that's what gets us to the final issue on the labor book. And so the arbitrator had no basis, for example, to conclude that the delay in the return of the labor book was a breach of the settlement agreement, because it just doesn't appear in there. Nowhere does the arbitrator indicate where there's a breach of the settlement agreement in any of this, because it does not exist. The only way it can exist is if the arbitrator rewrites the agreement between the parties to include obligations that were never there in the first place. And the only way he gets there is by going to Russian law and finding obligations which the parties did not agree to be a part of the settlement agreement going forward. If we respect the Seventh Circuit's limited review on this, if that limited review is going to be meaningful, it has to be meaningful in the context that the arbitration, the parties get the finality that they bargained for, but also the procedures that they bargained for. The Seventh Circuit has said that itself on many occasions. Here we end up with a result that is based upon a Russian law and a Russian remedy, which is clearly completely outside the context of what the parties had agreed to.
What is the Indiana law that governs the provision of labor books?
There is none, and that's why Masco Corporation...
Well, but then what you would expect is that the arbitrator would turn to Indiana's choice of law rules, which he did.
The arbitrator...
Indiana choice of law rules would point to Russian law.
Pardon me, and I'm not sure that's correct, but...
That is what the arbitrator said.
That's what the arbitrator said, so we're bound by that. I think the outcome could have been different, but for example, the law of Lithuania probably had as many contexts as Russia, but we don't need to get into that discussion. But the point is that the arbitrator should not have addressed the labor book issue in the first place, because it was not an obligation of the parties. Under Indiana law, you look at the four corners of the document. It's unambiguous. It says there are no obligations of any kind unless expressly set forth in this agreement. And the agreement set forth very specific obligations of Masco Corporation to pay money, to issue an organizational announcement, which it did, and a couple of other things, which are indisputably Masco performed all of those. And so an arbitrator applying Indiana law never gets to the issue of what Russian law applies. If there's a labor book issue out there, it's an obligation that exists from Masco to the Russian government, not to Peter Prostyakov. Peter Prostyakov negotiated that away in his settlement agreement. It's clear, unambiguous on its face, and the Seventh Circuit, following Indiana law, has and other law has said. If there's an unambiguous settlement agreement, that's what governs the conduct of the parties in the arbitration context. And that's why we're here today. Because we want to hold the arbitrator and the district court and Mr. Prostakov to the agreement which they had agreed to. I see that my light is on. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal, if I may.
Certainly. Mr. Paul.
May it please the court, my name is Steve Plopper. I have the privilege of representing Peter Prostakov, appellee in this matter. In case you're wondering, this is a Russian labor book. This is
Actually,
Mr. Prostakov's labor book.
From whom has it been withheld?
This was withheld from Mr. Prostakov by Masco. It was in their possession.
You need it now?
He needs it now. I've got it for the moment, but he's right over here.
And you're going to give it back to him after your fees in this case have been paid?
Yes, Your Honor, I am. In this instance, Masco has said to your question that they had no obligation in regard to this labor book, and yet it was in their possession. At the time the settlement agreement was entered into, their obligation was to put an entry in the labor book that was consistent with the terms of the settlement agreement. They did not do this. They put a backdated entry into the settlement agreement in August of 1996 that is very detrimental to Mr. Prostakov, and that was the breach of the settlement agreement. The arbitrator rightfully held that the breach under Indiana law could be corrected by an executive order performed wholly within the United States. We offered expert Russian legal testimony, as did Masco at the arbitration. They brought in a Russian law expert, as we did. And the arbitrator fashioned a remedy under Russian law that would help Mr. Prostakov have his employment rights returned to him. That was really the essence of this whole dispute. As to the first issue raised by Masco, that the AAA did not have jurisdiction, we'd submit that AAA doesn't exercise jurisdiction. It is a case administrator, and that's all they were in this particular case. We had very specific procedures. Yes, sir.
I thought the argument was that the arbitrator didn't have jurisdiction, not that the AAA didn't have jurisdiction.
Well, they mix it up in their arguments, Your Honor.
The arbitrator is said not to have had jurisdiction is because the AAA twisted Masco's arm by limiting its potential choice of arbitrators. I mean, that's the argument, as I understand.
That is their argument, Your Honor. And in this instance, we had a very specific procedure for selecting an arbitrator, and it was followed to the letter. We appointed an arbitrator, Susan Getzendanner, to help select a third. They appointed John Trimble to help select a third. Mr. Trimble and Ms. Getzendanner selected Max Hiddle as the arbitrator. That is specifically what was called for in the arbitration agreement, in the arbitration clause. Following, and we would submit that he was well within his powers and authority under Rule 7A.
I take it that this dispute was itself arbitrated.
Yes, it was.
That is, the arbitrator decided that he had been chosen in a proper way.
It was, and in his scheduling order number 2, he ruled on his own jurisdiction. He ruled on it again after the arbitration proceedings when Masco filed a motion to dismiss with him. So he ruled it on it twice, and then it was confirmed by the district court. It is the same argument. That same argument is being rehashed here before you today. The second issue that is raised is whether or not the arbitrator exceeded his powers in his use of Russian law in fashioning a remedy to help Mr. Prostakov. After 4 days of testimony and writing findings of facts and conclusions and an arbitration award, this arbitrator very conscientiously applied Indiana law, said that the settlement agreement had been breached under Indiana law, and that there was a legal consequence that flowed from that breach, and that was what happened with this labor book. That legal consequence that flowed from the breach, he had no choice but to look to Russian law to see what he could do to fashion a remedy for Mr. Postiakov. The third issue that has been raised is whether the labor book issue is arbitrable at all. The district court made rather short shrift of this argument. She said that a sophisticated party like Masco should well have contemplated that the labor book issue, which is simply an extension of employment, is something that was contemplated by the parties. And the very fact it was in the possession of Masco, again, they should have contemplated that the labor book would be a part and parcel of this agreement. It is not mentioned. The labor book is not mentioned in any place in the settlement agreement. And that is because at the time that we negotiated the settlement agreement, we had no idea there was anything wrong with the labor book. It hadn't been delivered back to Mr. Postiakov and wouldn't be until his employment was actually terminated, which happened with the settlement agreement when they parted ways. Please, the court, unless there are questions, we would rest.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Mr. Plotter. Anything further, Mr. Wilkmer?
Yes, sir.
Just a few points to address those raised by Mr. Plotter. The first is his statement that the entry must be consistent, and the entry in the labor book must be consistent with the settlement agreement. I have the settlement agreement here, and I've read through it dozens of times. There's not a place in the settlement agreement that mentions the labor book. There's nothing that requires an entry to be consistent with the settlement agreement. And by the way, the entry in the labor book was factually correct. The Russian court found it to be factually correct. The arbitrator found it to be factually correct. The district court did not disturb that finding, and therefore, what the arbitrator has ordered Masco to do is change the facts, which change history to make it appear as if Postiakov was not terminated in April of 1996, but was terminated in August of 2005, effectively reinstating him and treating this as almost as if it's a wrongful discharge case. In fact, as he went, if you could read through the arbitrator's decision, he talks about an employment agreement, and even the district court then refers to this as a type of equitable relief that typically happens in a wrongful discharge case. But this isn't a wrongful discharge case. This is a case in which we have an unambiguous settlement agreement, and that four corners is what the arbitrator was required to look at, and he didn't do it. And we did have to bring in a Russian expert to explain what we understood the law to be. The plaintiffs, Mr. Postiakov's Russian expert admitted he didn't even know Indiana law. He didn't know anything about the settlement agreement. He was there to talk only about, he didn't even know about Russian procedures. He only knew about Russian labor law. And he fed to Mr. Hiddle obligation or provisions of Russian labor law, which were not part of this agreement, which were then incorporated into this agreement. This was the fear that Masco had when wanted to stay away from in the AAA, because it did not want the AAA to make this into an international dispute. It's a local Indiana dispute to be decided under Indiana law. What the AAA did was come in and limit us to the universe of arbitrators to 10, and we had to select from one of those 10, and that's undisputed. It's almost a hijacking of the proceedings. It should not have been involved in any case. And finally, I want to go back to the labor book issue again. There is admissions by Mr. Postiakov all the way through that the labor book is separate and apart from the settlement agreement. It was not part of it. It was not to be tied to it. Those are his specific words and admissions throughout the proceedings. And so he admits that it is separate and not to be part of it. It is the arbitrator on his own that decides that this labor book needs it, and the obligations that he thinks should be associated with this labor book under Russian law should be grafted into the settlement agreement, essentially rewriting it for the parties. We think that this case falls squarely within the parameters of the Federal Arbitration Act and with the precedent of the Seventh Circuit to require a vacation of this award, and we request that the court consider that and give us the relief that we've requested today. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Otherwise, those are my remarks.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.